Big Endian isn't dead. So what does that mean? When we look at the PowerPC specification, PowerPC, big computer processor architecture in the 90s, it was used in expensive IBM machines and expensive Apple machines. We see this big section, programming nodes. The terms Big Endian and Little Endian came from part one, chapter four of Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels. Here's the complete passage from the edition printed in 1734 by George Faulkner in Dublin. I'm not going to read that, but if you want to, get the PowerPC specification or Gulliver's Travels. But what does this mean in computers? Let's consider we have a program that defines a type T, which is a union, so the same memory interpreted in two ways, of a 32-bit integer and 4 bytes. Now we initialize the 32-bit integer representation with this number, and then we print the bytes. What will this print? Any who wants to guess? What platform am I on? That's a good question. Well, C runs on multiple platforms. So if we run it for compiled for S390X, which is IBM's very expensive machines, it's sort of what you might naively expect. 2025-11-02, today's date. But on other machines, you get this. Now, what's this big Endian, little Endian stuff? Endian is, as the term has developed in computer context, describes the relationship between bytes in memory, because today's computer memory is usually byte addressed. Every byte gets one address, and the next byte is one higher, and larger values. So in this case, a 32-bit number, that's 4 bytes. There are two ways to do this. Either you start with the least significant part, which is this 2, or you start with the most significant part, which is why you might, in some sources, read MSB, LSB, most significant byte, least significant byte. Or you just point to the first byte and say, that's the big end, or that's the little end. So you're big endian or little endian. Most computers used and sold today operate in little endian most of the time. But actually, if we look at the processor architectures developed over the past 20, 30 years, most of them support both modes. So in the 80s and 90s, big Endian was still more common than it is today. One large driver for little Endian adoption was Microsoft Windows NT, because NT in its early days was designed to be portable to many architectures. So it supported x86, of course, MIPS, PowerPC, Alpha, a bunch of stuff, some of which is somewhat relevant still. But only ever in little Endian. So even when there were processors like, PA RISC, probably no one knows this these days, HP's own RISC architecture, also got half of an unfinished Windows NT port. But anyway, those processors had to run in little Endian to support Windows, even if Windows on them wasn't commercialized it. It was part of the early Windows NT development to push for Little Onion. So today, what's left of Big Endian only processors, that's just S390X, just IBM's mainframe. Just imagine a whole rack, and that's one computer, or four racks, or more than that with special cables, one computer. It's very expensive. Little Endian only architectures exist. The most famous one is x86, both in its 32 and 64 bit variants. But when you look at other stuff, it's actually a little blurrier. Edge 64, which is the ARM architecture 64 bit with a weird name because they chose a weird name, also known as ARM64, which is a less weird name, can actually most of the time do both. Interestingly, the Linux kernel can be configured in Little Endian or Big Endian and will kind of just boot. So a while ago, I started compiling Alpine Linux for AH64 Big Endian. For more information, visit ah64.be. And I wrote a big document listing all the stuff that's broken, and some stuff that's some packages are just stupid all on their own and don't need AH64BE to be stupid. Some stuff is just GCC was updated to GCC 15, now comes with a standard default C standard of C23, which changed some things, like you can't type dev bool anymore because bool is predefined. And lots of packages break due to that, which is not really related to H64BE, but I found it while trying to compile all packages. Some programs need explicit support for architectures, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes because they're weird. Like the Go compiler, of course, it has its own code generator, it needs special support. Some things I've managed to fix, or some bugs just disappeared with the GCC update. This is what it looks like. Linux just mostly works, but the frame buffer colors are wrong. This is what it looks like on a phone. Frame buffer colors are very wrong and it crashes somewhere, but I think Adrian, who did this with me, fixed the underlying bug here, I think. Some other people had mixed success. Try not to mix UEFI with Big Endian. It's not fun. I'll leave it at that. I'll say some examples of broken and fixed things. The Hexagon RPC is a package to speak with co-processors on Qualcomm smartphones. What did it do? Where's the old code? All right, classic. You have a byte array. You just cast your byte pointer to UN64, UN32 T pointer in this case, like a bigger pointer to a bigger integer, and assign a value. That value is going to be assigned, like in this example, is in the host endianess, so whatever the CPU is currently operating in. This does not help with when you expect a certain specific encoding in your byte array, because you're sending an RPC message, a remote procedure call, to another processor, which does not run in Big Endian. So the solution here was to just this is a bit weird, a bit ugly, but H2LE32 means host to little endian 32 bits. So this takes a value that's in the host endianness, swaps it around if it needs swapping around to arrive at little endian, and then you can store it like a normal number. And there are other ways to do this, other portable ways, but this is one portable way to store in defined endianness. And because this hexagon RPC package has tests, this made the tests pass. Some other packages, like Janet, that's a Lisp implementation or scheme or something. I don't know much about Lisp, so I don't know the difference between Lisp and scheme. It just needs to recognize the architecture as one of those that exist, and also it has this list where it determines this is one of the Big Endian architectures, and then some stuff is different. And after I defined this one line, the tests passed and it just worked. This is another thing which I reported but didn't fix. An Objective-C runtime, which has some special assembly code for every architecture to do some table lookup internally. Also just needed a Big Endian switch there that was fixed. Well, this was an interesting one. So the Google project named Abseil, I'm not going to try to pronounce it in English because it's a German word, has, like many projects, some optimizations for ARM64. In this case, for doing non-temporal memcopy, which is a funny idea of issuing store instructions which complete sometime in the future rather than now. And when you've done all of them, you say, okay, now please do consistency, and then the memcopy is done. Anyway, this had an implementation of this copy loop that uses ARM's vector extensions. And the issue is it loaded the value, like each value to be copied, as a vector of 32-bit integers, but then stored them as 64-bit integers. And when you do that on ARM64 Big Endian, you end up swapping the lower and higher 32-bit halves of your 64-bit value, which results in copying things wrong. So I fixed that by just doing the load in with an element size of 64 bits as well. So it's matched between the load and store, and then it actually works. Most of the commit message is just showing that it doesn't negatively impact existing users, which is the ARM64 Little Endian. GCC ended up swapping the arguments of this compare instruction, which makes no difference. And then just a small part of my commit message is just, hey, this also fixes Big Endian. And the user experience in, the developer experience, I should say, in Google repositories can be pretty awful. It just says closed, but that's because it the commit was copied into the Google internal repository. So it doesn't show merge because it didn't go through GitHub for merging. But anyway, it was effectively merged. Sometimes, this is MariaDB, you have some algorithms that need to read some values in Little Endian. In this case, the way the CRC32 instruction works in ARM64, the input needs to be read in Little Endian. And previously it just did the cast to 64-bit pointer of buffer and then read one word, one 64-bit word, which, as we've seen, loads in Host Endian, it's not Little Endian. But MariaDB already has these macros with a questionable name that do the right thing. I think uint 8 core means uint 8 in the correct byte order. This is lost to history, I think. But it was already that way when it was still known as MySQL. And also the test didn't catch some of the catch a bug that I had in my code, so I improved the test to catch my bug that I found by looking at it. Always good. Check your tests if they actually do something or just pretend to do something. This is my list of commits on top of the Alpine ports repository, which contains all the package definitions. I'll keep rebasing it. If you've seen the Free Shells paper, then you might have logged into a ARM64 Big Endian machine. Unfortunately, someone powered it off, so you can't log in anymore. But I have a machine at home which basically does the same. Yes, indeed, so we can have Big Endian at home. And it's, what I'm running this on is cheap Android TV boxes. Like 10 or 15 euros per piece. They just work in Big Endian, surprisingly. Neo fetch. It's just a bit IO loaded. Now the problem is, I'm compiling all the Alpine packages, and whenever there's a C++ packages. A C++ package, it spawns 8 instances of the C++ compiler. Each of them takes like half a gigabyte of RAM, and I have 2 gigabytes of RAM in there. My biggest problem with compiling all the packages has been CC1+, the internal process of GCC, which translates C++. Okay, this is too slow. Oh yeah. So this is on the left, the serial connection to the same machine, and how long will kill all dash stop CC1 plus take? Too long. Because it's swapping like hell. So what's the future for AR64BE? The Linux kernel maintainers are not very happy with carrying this feature. To quote this email, big Endian ARM64 configurations are vanishingly rare, which is correct, yet we still claim to support them in Linux, despite very limited testing of visible interest. Supporting big Endian adds unnecessary burden to reviewers and contributors, which without any known active users is hard to justify. For example, recent work to improve of Futex routines and to implement nested virtualization support is non-trivially complicated by having to support both big and little endianers. Back in 2019, it was claimed that Huawei were using ARM64 big endian machines in their telecommunications products, but I don't know whether that's still the case, and certainly haven't seen any patch contributions to help support and maintain it. And then they added dependency on the broken symbol in the Linux configuration, which means, hello, I also want to consider configurations which are known to be broken. Notably, this patch doesn't actually claim that it's broken, just that there aren't enough people testing it and there's interest in removing the feature. Where's the email chain? This spawned some discussion. Including by someone else, the lead developer of the Adeli Linux distribution, which is fairly serious about portability and big endian support. That's if you want a desktop Linux distro on your old Power Macs, that's one option. What did it render the yes real NeoFetch? So Alpine Linux Edge, which means just the releases without the rolling release without release numbers for AH64BE on random TV box. Oops. It's not very fast either, but it has a good amount of CPUs. CC1 Plus is crunching. I'm still compiling libopenmpt. We did. It was continuously running, to be fair, but if you try this at home, get more RAM. And also, if you want to try this at home, go to ar64.be again. I have a package repository, and also bootable QEMU images. Well, one image, but it boots. Unless you use Apple's UTM. So hardware support for Big Endian is, as far as I know, in all or most ARM designed CPU cores for 64-bit, but not necessarily in cores from designed by other companies. So my so far unconfirmed suspicion is that Apple Silicon ARM64 chips don't support Big Endian. I should test that, but that is my suspicion at the moment, because I have no reason to support it. It probably makes the fast paths through the chip a bit more difficult. There's also an IRC channel, but no one ever showed up there. Questions. I think there's a microphone somewhere.
Do you have an opinion on RISC-V, Big Endian, and if so, what is your opinion?
I've seen, oh, someone's meowing at me, right? Fanful. I've seen the email from Linus Torvalds, who says, what the fuck? Basically, paraphrasing, he kind of has a point, because that's just another axis in the huge configuration space of RISC-V, which has already led to an extreme amount of fragmentation, because every RISC-V vendor just does something different, and it's a huge mess. I'm happy that people have implemented RISC-V Big Endian. Let's see if any hardware actually is going to support it. Meanwhile, we can get a lot of ARM hardware which supports Big Endian, even though almost no one runs the Big Endian software on it.
Maybe I missed something basic, but if you're going to do like an add instruction, for example, that works differently with Big Endian and Little Endian, right?
No. Add instructions usually, like in, okay, I'm going to say x86 is unusual, but many people will not share that position. No, an add instruction in ARM64 is register to register. And my mental model of this, which I think is a useful model, is that registers don't have endianness, not really. Because it's the relationship between a 32 or 64-bit register value and byte addressable memory. So the add just, you know, 2 plus 3 is 5, etc. And if you overflow the first, the lowest 8 bits, it just overflows further. But once you store it back into memory, it takes a representation that depends on the endianness.
So does ARM have two different instructions for loading and storing to memory? Or
For the endianness stuff, no. There might be, but it's not central to this. How it works is that there's a special system register that configures the system to be little endian or big endian. And actually, the Linux kernel will set this register automatically when you boot according to what you configured the kernel for. You can see this in the QEMU boot script, not like this. Copy link, Vim, Magnify. It's just QEMU system Air 64. It's the little endian QEMU, and then it boots a version of U-boot that I compiled, which is still little endian, and then the boot commands that I saved in the U-boot environment variables load a kernel, and the kernel then decides to run in Big Endian.
So what endianness does it run on before that gets set?
It boots in little endian until you reach the kernel, and then the kernel switches to Big Endian. OK. Okay, we seem to be done with questions. How about comments? Thank you.
Thank you.